News fans, on today's pod, we return to our highly respected, yet hugely unofficial Hall of Fame. Today's potential inductee played over 300 games for United, most of them in midfield, but with the occasional goalkeeper appearance. He's a player who made his first professional start at the Abbey whilst playing for Oxford, aged just 17. A player who was released from Lincoln by John Beck, a player known by many as the King of the Abbey. So today's UTAS is a return to our Hall of Fame. Today's inductee had a pretty decent spell as part of a midfield trio, and I'm pleased to say there's a less effective trio of us on the pod today. My name's Jordan. I'm going to be hosting. I'm joined by the ever reliable Owen Kiernan.
Hello.
How's it going, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Yeah, not too bad at all.
Rather fetching shirt, an appropriate shirt that you're wearing.
Yeah, I thought I'd dig this one out of the collection. It's just the 1999-2001 home shirt, as worn by Mr. Wanless.
It's the C&R Windows shirt, but not the tomato ketchup blob C&R Windows shirt. So Owen and I have disagreeing opinions on this. I prefer the one with the hideous logo, but Owen prefers the more smarter looking one. Talking of smart looking, we're joined by someone that is the opposite. Welcome back to the pod, Mr. Tom Dobbin.
Pleasure to be here. I have, neatened myself up, but apparently still not good enough for the UTAS pods.
You did one with us a little while ago, right? And that was like, was that a preview pod or was that just a regular conversation pod? I forget.
It was a preview pod before the season had kicked off, and I think we were all predicting lower half kind of relegation battle with
hey, it could still happen
within the first month. So I am the happy clapper of this pod because it has gone the complete opposite.
So you are the classic A trialist that appeared in pre-season and never to be heard of again. But welcome back. Right, so today's pod, Hall of Fame. We're going to talk about a man who typifies the never say die attitude that all football fans love. Paul Wanless gave his all for Cambridge United. The legend that is Roy McFarlane memorably put it, Paul Wanless is the example. Whenever he put the shirt on, you knew what you were going to get from him. There's two parts to today's pod. Part two is an interview with the man himself. But in part one, we're going to talk about why we should induct Paul Wanless to our Hall of Fame for reasons other than the fact we've got an interview with him coming up in part two and it'd be a waste of great content. Tom, you're subbed in today to introduce Paul Wanless. So why should we induct him as a Hall of Fame member?
I mean, you've pretty much hit the nail on the head already. He was, still is, as far as I'm concerned, King of the Abbey. Nobody's kind of replaced him or come close. I don't think we've had a kind of midfield dynamo or captain since Paul Wanless who could compare to him. He was my kind of first taste of Cambridge United as well. When I started supporting the club, or my first game as a kind of youthful teenager, Wanless was the heart of the midfield and, Captain Marvel and kind of led by example. That kindled my love for lower league two football.
Brilliant. Owen, do you remember your first impressions of Paul Wanless?
I'm trying to think. I remember it was Tommy Taylor that signed him, wasn't it? So it would have been that season we had that fairly awful quartered shirt. I don't remember a huge amount about him that first season. I know we had kind of Paul Rayner in midfield at that point, who was in his second spell at the club, was kind of fairly portly and not really very good. To see someone like Wanless come in, who was a fair bit younger and a hell of a lot more athletic. I remember him kind of just being. He's just always been there. Like my early memories of Cambridge United are just Paul Wanless there, number seven shirt in midfield.
A lot of people are going to be listening to this and screaming at that line where you said that the quartered shirt was awful. I know a lot of people that love that shirt and love that badge. So, 2 minutes in and already one controversial statement. Also, I remember Paul Rayner from said shirt and I maybe it's because I was young, but I thought he was quite a good player. But I was just really devastated that he turned out in older life to be just a bit of a not very nice person when he was assistant manager with Steve Evans. So that was kind of diminished a childhood sort of memory right there. But yeah, he first came to the club as a right back. Does anyone remember him playing at fullback at all?
I remember like occasionally when backed to the wall and you'd see Wanless like in the heart of defence, but whether that was just because he was knackered and couldn't move up from midfield. But you know, sometimes, especially during that promotion winning season on farm, when backs to the walls, that Wanless stood out as somebody who could essentially, like you said, play in that centre back role. I think, you know, most of the time I remember him as the midfield maestro.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. So Wanless, for those that don't know, did 8 years with the club. He signed in March 1996. It was Tommy Taylor that signed him, as Owen mentioned a little bit earlier. And the team at the time were in a pretty desperate position. I think they were just a place or two above the relegation spot in what was Division 3 at the time, League 2 to you and I now. And yeah, there was an injury crisis at the club. They picked up Wanless on loan and he played at right back, and sort of with him in the team, the club sort of slowly turned it around and crawled their way to the dizzy heights of 16th spot, but a safety spot nonetheless from relegation. And it was his last game of that season where after 4 minutes, he replaced Scott Barrett in goal away to Leyton Orient, I believe. And that then started, I don't know, that was the first of three, I believe, appearances where he went into goal. And when people sort of say your first memories of Paul Wanless, to me, for all those brilliant, brilliant midfield appearances, those three times he went in goal are pretty memorable. And I'm struggling to think of other sort of outfield players that have put the gloves on and gone in goal for United since then.
I know that Hughesy's done it a couple of times, didn't he? Went in goal, but there's always that kind of romance when an outfield player has to don the gloves, isn't it? And like you really, really feel for them. But yeah, I remember one going in the sticks a couple of times. It was just, I can't remember the results, but yeah, you know, did all right.
I've got the results written down. So the first one was that Leyton Orient one, which I mentioned. So he basically did a full 90 in goal. And he didn't concede, so clean sheet there. The second time he did it, I think he did about an hour, and again, another clean sheet. It was only on the third time when he did it, he conceded twice, and I think we lost to Brighton at home. I think it was sort of 2-0 or 2-1. There's some really grainy footage knocking around on YouTube. But yeah, there's something about just seeing a goalkeeper wearing like the normal shorts and socks of an outfield player that just makes me hugely nostalgic to sort of that sort of period. So turning to sort of him as a midfielder, because that's obviously what he's best known for. When someone says Paul Wanless to either of you, what do you remember about his output and his style of play and what he brought to United?
I remember him being a kind of no-nonsense midfielder. Like he kind of fell behind very much that front three of Butler, Shaggy and Benjamin, wasn't it? So they took the kind of headlines in our promotion season. But, you know, it was a case of him being, I think, paired with Ashby, Musto as well. And that kind of diamond and him in the defensive midfield slot kind of, yeah, essentially wiping up everything that we did wrong. But just being a kind of no-nonsense, I remember him diving into the tackles, but I remember as well, and it's a weird thing to kind of say for football, I remember him having a good sense of humour on the pitch. Like I remember a couple of times joking with ref, even doing that kind of fake dive at one point, the kind of same thing that Van Gaal repeated on the touchlines when I think it was an opposition player, clearly dived in front of the ref and won the free kick. But yeah, I always remember he played with a smile on his face as well. And, it's kind of something that's abolished from the game now with his no personality midfielders, but yeah, one who definitely had that.
He was very I don't remember him getting sent off. I'm sure he probably did, but I don't remember him ever being sent off. I don't remember him picking up a huge amount of bookings. Like he was tough, and he was, you know, very, very, yeah, like you say, no nonsense. But I don't ever recall him being particularly dirty. And like, you know, we've had some dirty players in the time, but you know, the team, like, in particular think of like the 98-99 promotion team now, it was such an attacking, flary team. Yet I don't remember there being, you know, I don't remember like teams really kicking us loads or anything like that. I just seem to think, you know, my memory of that team is just, you know, Alex Russell skipping past everyone and Butler, Benjamin Taylor banging in tons of goals. But one was like, he was yeah, the kind of defensive linchpin of that midfield alongside Ashby. He normally played a little bit further back, then he normally played left back, and then he had Musto and Priest were the other two kind of midfielders there. They were all fairly, I don't know if Musto was fairly attacking, but Priest used to like to get forward a lot, even though he was fairly old and at the time and kind of couldn't really. But what one was for you know, he was the defensive midfielder, that was his role. But he also chipped in with a lot of goals, didn't he? And, you know, certainly towards the end of that promotion season where things were starting to run away from us a little bit, weren't they? We were top for ages, and then we had a little run where we, I think we drew with Borough and maybe lost one or two other games there. But he scored like three or four goals towards the end of the season, all within a few games. Against Borough, I think he scored the equalising goal, and we thrashed Halifax as well around that time, and I think he scored in that game as well. So yeah, you know, he always contributed with goals as well, which is something you don't always get from your defensive midfielder, and I think that's what made him stand out a little bit.
I'm glad you mentioned the goal against Borough. If you stay with us and listen to part two, there's a good story from the man himself about that goal and what he remembers from it. You mentioned that he got his fair share of goals. He seemed to always score with his head, or was really, really reliable from the penalty spot. I feel like if, you know, there was fantasy football for Division 3 back then, he would be like such a good, cheap sort of option to have into your team with whatever money you've got left over, because he's on penalties and he's pretty reliable with them. Yeah, I guess when I think about his style of play, I think there's one kind of image that constantly sticks in my mind. It's from a really hot August 2000, one of the opening games of the season at home. We played against Bury, and his head is all bandaged up.
Yeah, head
bandaged. And there's plenty of interviews sort of with him knocking around YouTube. There's one that 100 Years of Coconuts did, and they mentioned that in their sort of interview with him. But I didn't realise at the time, probably because I was a bit younger, but he had 9 stitches without sort of any kind of like pain relief or anything whilst they were doing it, and then came back on and played. And I think that is kind of the epitome of the Paul Wanless that we know and love and remember, that, you know, if you cut him open, he'd bleed amber and black, but he'd happily bleed it for you. Do you think there was, you know, thinking back to sort of his style of play, yeah, he was that sort of hard midfielder, didn't shy out of a challenge, was a leader on the pitch. But do you think there was more to his game that perhaps people don't remember? Because I seem to remember that, you know, along with kind of the bravery and you know, the incredible work rate, there was kind of a bit of a creative player there. Like, I think if you asked him, he would say that, you know, his job wasn't to be creative and it was to win the ball and give it to someone else that's creative. But I seem to remember quite a few defence splitting passes here and there. Do you remember any other sort of instances where he kind of sort of broke from the stereotype and was perhaps a little bit more creative?
I think that formation brought the best out of him and the players alongside him. You know, having someone like Russell alongside him, having someone like Butler, who, you know, it's very similar to Mullin, is now you kind of get him a ball in a good position and he's probably going to put it away. So, you know, I've always loved that formation. I've always loved a 4-3-3 formation. I'd like to see us try it again, although it's a little bit, it's not particularly fashionable now in football, is it? It's not, you know, it's more about kind of having a strong midfield, and yeah, I don't know if it would really work, but it's something I'd like to see Bonner give a try, is a 4-3-3. You know, Digby could be the Wanless kind of character. But yeah, he wasn't just your tackler, was he? He wasn't just your tough tackler. He did have he did have a good pass in him. He had a, you know, certainly an eye for goal. He had an eye for attacking play. I'd agree with that, definitely.
I think even, you know, when that promotion team, kind of the ins and outs, so Benjamin went off to Leicester and Shaggy was getting a bit old, like we brought in Tudor and Rietza as well. So like you said, we still kind of kept that width. And it was, like you said, it was good formation, one that I'd love us to pick up again. So yeah, when you have those creative players alongside you, it's easy to kind of feed them the ball and then watch them do the rest. But yeah, I mean, you've got to be good with the ball at your feet to kind of hold that position, haven't you? So there's no doubt in my mind that he was that player as well. But everyone will remember him, you know, bandage head, flying into a tackle, screaming at the defence.
I think it's really telling of his sort of legacy with the club that, you know, years on after he's stopped playing for us, he's still the benchmark for kind of defensive midfielders. You know, we quite often go through seasons saying, oh, we're missing a Wanless type player. Or when we do get like a good defensive midfielder, you know, like Digby is showing to be this year, he's kind of used as a benchmark, isn't it? You know, comparing Digby to how Wanless was back then. And even the team that got us out of the conference, the comparisons, you know, with Tom Champion, Julian from the pod absolutely adores Tom Champion, but didn't see Paul Wanless because of his sort of, you know, age and years supporting United. Whereas people at the time are sort of comparing, you know, Champion to that role. So I guess that's another kind of sort of factor in why he should be, you know, added to the Hall of Fame, because years after not playing, he still has that kind of sort of benchmark that that we compare other people to.
He had that longevity at the club as well. He was there for, what, 7-8 seasons, I think. So as well as the promotion, you know, there were the kind of League One, Division Two back then, where we were in a relegation battle. And, you know, he was definitely up for a fight. And he played in a lot of different teams for a lot of different managers. And I think it's a testament to the player he was that, when new managers came in, you know, Wanless was one of the first names on the team sheet. And I can't remember how old he was when he left us, but he was definitely kind of in the twilight of his career. So, yeah. I think that kind of marks the player he is.
It's interesting you say that he was always first name on the team sheet, because I wanted to talk about the highs that he achieved at the club and our fond memories. And I'm sure if I asked the question, you know, like what was probably his highlight, you both would turn around to me and say, well, that promotion winning year under McFarlane. But if you look back at it, when McFarlane first came in, he actually dropped Wanless out of the starting lineup. Admittedly, not for long, because Wanless being Wanless, he worked his way back into contention. But I think that's kind of one of the sort of factors to the Wanless story, which kind of makes it such an epic one, and one that perhaps people forget, that, you know, he has this legendary status, but he had to sort of fight for it. You know, he wasn't, you know, first choice for McFarlane when Taylor came in, when John Taylor came in as manager again. I think he sort of played with the idea of not starting with Wanless, but he had this kind of sort of ability to keep sort of playing himself back into contention. So yeah, let's talk about sort of the highs that Wanless achieved at the club. Anyone want to throw one out?
No, the promotion season was great, and the kind of three or so seasons that followed that in the league were quite difficult for us. And, you know, we kind of stayed up by the skin of our teeth a couple of times. But we also had some really good cup runs during those seasons as well, which, you know, I look back on those years fondly, even though we were really kind of quite crap and, you know, struggling for survival. You know, I look back on those years and I don't think about the kind of big league defeats. And I think one of them was like, I think we got thrashed by Millwall, didn't we? Like 5-1 at the Den. But, you know, I look back to the FA Cup games against, we beat Crystal Palace. I think he might have even scored in that game.
He did.
We played Bolton after that, which, yeah, okay, it was a defeat, but it should never have been. We should have won that. the LDV run as well, where we got to Millennium Stadium against Blackpool, and he scored the penalty for us, which put us 1-0 up before we collapsed and lost 4-1. So, you know, I don't ever look back on Wanless as a player that wasn't very good, because, you know, I think even by his own admission, he'll probably admit, you know, he was never a most skillful player, never the best player, and those teams had great players in them. But he was always there. He was always committed. And even if we did lose, we didn't really go down without a fight. And I think that was because of him. And if you look forward to the season we went out of the league, where Wanless wasn't at the club and we had the likes of Justin Walker in midfield, that season we did go down without a fight, apart from Justin Walker fighting Luke Guttridge. But you know, there was no
I think that was Danny Webb, wasn't it?
It might have been Danny Webb, yeah. Everyone was fighting everyone that season. They just weren't fighting for the points. And, you know, I think that's kind of quite telling, isn't it? In that, you know, you lose the Wanless type player. And, you know, we've said for a long time since, you know, the only real Wanless type player we've had since is probably Tom Champion and maybe Digby this season. You know, you need that. You need that person who's going to make you fight. Like, okay, you might not be the best team and you might lose, but, you know, give them a game. And we always did.
What about you, Tom? If someone says your best moments of Paul Wanless wearing a Cambridge shirt, where does your mind go to straight away?
Again, I mean, you know, it's kind of been fixed with that promotion season. But yeah, like it's mentioned, when we were kind of had those three seasons in Division Two, League One. Yeah, he was always there and up for a fight. And you know, the much coveted LDV Vans Cup run that we had with him taking the penalty, because we were quite nervous when we got that. I still remember, you know, who's going to take it, because we loved missing penalties. I think even with Dave Kitson, who we had in the team, we still missed a stupid amount. So when he stepped up and scored, and for that brief moment, he thought, oh, yeah, we're going to turn this round. But in true Cambridge United style, we capitulated.
I mean, we were playing a very good Blackpool team that were, what, I think they were sort of pushing for promotion in the same league as us.
I think
It was a disappointment.
They had Brett Omerod as well.
They did, yeah. Tommy Yashin, who ended up...
I was going to say, yeah, they had the defender that ended up playing for us.
Yeah, he was really good for them. He was, yeah. I was quite pleased when we got him, thinking, oh, yeah, he's going to be brilliant. But, he was on his way out.
I probably should have watched the highlights before doing this pod to be accurate, but I seem to remember that penalty against, in the final at the Millennium Stadium. It's in front of the Blackpool fans, I remember. So the opposite end to us. And I think it was one of those where he just waited for the keeper to move and then put it down the middle. But I'm hoping he listens to this and says, yeah, that was absolutely the plan. Of course it was. But I remember it being probably not maybe the most, best penalty that he struck with us with conviction. But yeah, it was a temporary high on what was quite a disappointing day. I've got another highlight from Paul Wanless. And it's a bit of an odd one, but I wonder if you guys remember it. But he was part of the team where when we scored, there was a brief period of a game or two where they did a rather elaborate celebration of the elephant, where they sort of one person at the front did the trunk and then they all sort of, I think they put their legs, their hands between their legs and sort of joined up and ran along. And the whole idea, it turned out, was to get themselves on... they think it's all over the panel show that used to like rip into Luke Chadwick. So I remember that as just like a youngster watching that that on a Friday night, and up popped Cambridge United. But yeah, he was part of that team. And there's a story that they did it. I can't remember if it's the first time they did it or not, but it was against Port Vale at the Abbey. And Wanless scored, so he started the celebration. I think he went at the front, and they ran along the sort of the touchline or whatever to then finish, look up and realise that because they'd run back into their own half, Port Vale were allowed to kick off and had done so and were sort of towering down on our goal. Fortunately, they didn't score from that situation. But yeah, that was a a good sort of highlight from his time. Any sort of goals that stand out for anyone for when Paul Wanlifts was here?
I think there was there a volley against Oxford that my memory is lacking. I can narrate all the Peppa Pig episodes to you, but my Cambridge knowledge for that season is all up on YouTube now. Yeah, goal against, I think, Oxford from the edge of the area that he smashed in top corner, I seem to remember.
Yeah, there's a similar one against Chester the year we went up as well, like a 40-yard kind of, yeah, just, you know, nothing's going to stop it type shot.
Yeah, he did have the odd screamer as well. Like you said, he won headers and penalties, and then every so often he'd just welly one in top corner from 30 yards.
There's a couple I remember or have been kind of reminded of while kind of checking some bits. Is I don't know if anyone remembers the game the year, I think the year after we went up, so 2001, it was we played Brentford at Griffin Park. Mm-hmm. On August Bank Holiday, and we lost 2-1, but he scored there. And I mean, my abiding memory of that game is it being glorious sunshine, and we was on the big open terrace, which I think come back to haunt us a couple of years later when we was ended up in the pissing rain there on the same terrace. But he also scored in the win at Stoke as well, if anyone remembers that. I think most people remember Marcus Richardson's kind of...
Yeah.
Well, yeah, famous game, because was that Kitson's first game for us and Marcus Richardson's first game for us as well? They both sort of John Beck signings that, you know, went on to have differing sort of futures with us. But yeah, huge result, like going to Stoke in front of a massive sort of crowd and getting a win.
It was like their new stadium as well, wasn't it? They must have been up there because they were really highly fancied to kind of get promoted, and, you know, did a few years after that and ended up in the Premier League for a few seasons. But yeah, that was a weird period, wasn't it? It was just that kind of, like, you know, John Beck signing all sorts of players. You know, who did you bring? Matty Clements. He brought in Matty Clements, who was, I think, last seen managing our local team for St Leeds, wasn't he, Tom? But I think he brought him in purely because he was pacey, purely because he was quick, and yeah, wasn't actually that good on the ball. But yeah, it just seemed to be like a never-ending revolving door of new players coming in. You know, some of them turned out to be really quite good, as in Kitson. Some of them were never really seen again, as in Marcus Richardson, until he was seen again about 2 years later when he turned up when we were in the conference.
I think my favourite Wanlifts goal was in a game that Owen, you've already mentioned, was when we beat Palace, I think 2-0. It might have been 2-1, but it was definitely two goals. Yeah, FA Cup, like you say. I think they were division above us, although struggling in that division. Yeah. It was a Friday night under the lights at the Abbey. Yeah. It was round 3, I think. So it would have been December time. So it was dark. But I remember that game because there was, you know, the old allotment end packed out with Palace fans. And there was one fat lad that had his shirt off the whole game. And for most of the game was sort of jumping up and down. But when Wanlifts scored that second and it basically put the tie beyond them, just remember sort of glancing off and seeing that fat topless man just stood there not jumping around anymore. So yeah, that one always sort of sticks in the memory for me. We talked about the highs of Paul Wanlifts's time at the club, but obviously over 8 years there were some lows as well. I just wondered if anyone would be willing to sort of share some of their sort of sadder sort of times with Wanlifts at the club, and I'll kick it off. Owen, you mentioned playing Brentford. I guess one of the lows for me would have been, you know, that promotion, you know, head to head, winner takes all game. You know, we still went up, but we didn't get the title. And I don't know if you remember, but I'm pretty sure Wanlifts hit the crossbar in that game. I think it was 0-0 at the time. That had gone in, we would have gone up as champions, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't actually remember. I was pretty drunk for that game. I was quite young. I was like 16, so probably only like two pints in. But yeah, I remember kind of having a few in the wrestlers before the game and being, yeah, a bit of a haze and just being gutted really when Lloyd Owusu scored what turned out to be the winning goal. Yeah, low points. I mean, he suffered quite heavily with injuries, didn't he, towards the end of his time here. I remember there was kind of, yeah, periods of time where he couldn't kind of hold down a place. And you know, I don't think it's any coincidence that coincided with us eventually getting relegated and, you know, starting our slide towards that season where we just got thumped every week and ended up going down. So, yeah, there's no real, like, standout bad performances I can think from him. You know, he always gave his all, which, you know, is all you can ask for from any footballer, really, isn't it? So,
yeah. Would you say, Tom, that your sort of low point, when you think back to the Wanderers time at Cambridge United, was, you know, the ending? You know, he was, I think it was John Taylor that basically sort of didn't put him into the squad and eventually, you know, released him. And I feel like at the time Taylor was maybe focusing on sort of a younger sort of crop of players and trying to sort of blood new people in. And I'm pretty sure that John Taylor's gone on record of saying that at the time, you know, like, looking back at it, he regrets that decision of letting go. Of letting Wanderers go.
It wasn't the send-off you'd want, was it? And that kind of previous relationship that Taylor and Wanderers had, kind of, I mean, they're still mates now. They were in the other season. I was chatting to them about it. But yeah, it's not the way you'd want to finish your time, and how we were doing as well. It kind of all fell apart, but because I have Wanderers tinted glasses, I refuse to admit any any wrongdoings in the man. But it's, you know, it's a shame that he couldn't play out another, I think, couple of seasons to get his testimonial. But yeah, he does have the T-bar, as we bring up in the interview, and I think one of the painted numbers on the back of the NRA. So he's very much. Yeah, he's already the fans one. Whether he's the UTAS one, I don't think there's much convincing. But if you do need, I'll just tell you one last story about Wanny, which is after his playing career came to an end, and this was a couple of years back, I got a text from a mate at a wedding. He was just like, I'm pretty sure there's a Cambridge United player sat on the table next to me. He's definitely a footballer. He's talking about his time. And I was like, send over a picture and I'll be able to identify it. So a couple of minutes later, I got a photo and it was Wanny. And I just messaged, I was like, for Wanny, it's the king of the abbey. And then he's like, oh, brilliant. I'll strike up a conversation. And, you know, I was sat at home. And then a couple of hours later, my phone rings and I answer it. And hello. It's just like, hi, mate. It's the king of the abbey, Paul Wanless. I was like, oh, brilliant. So I had this half an hour chat with Wanny. He was completely pissed off his face. And he was talking about how he tried to apply for the managerial position at the club and how he was doing now. And, you know, we chatted and then it ended. And then I think about 2 hours later, so it must have been about 2 a.m. or something, I got a buzz on my phone and I was asleep. And I looked over and it was a picture message from my mate. And it was Wanny doing a beer bong of him at the wedding. So this beer going full down all his jacket and his suit. And yeah, that just, yeah, that is the man for me.
That's brilliant. Well, we talked about the highs, we talked about the lows. In part two, we have an interview with the man. But before we get there, let's do a very quick vote about whether or not he will be added to the UTAS Hall of Fame. I have a sneaky suspicion I know how this one is going to play out, but Owen, is it a yes from you?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. He's king of the Abbey still to this day.
It's a yes from me on the basis that he's forgiven us for that awful, awful afternoon, our first game in the conference away at Forest Green, where I think one of our fans gave him an earful. As long as he's forgiven us for that, thank you for the memories. It's a definite yes from me. Tom, I think it's safe to assume.
Oh, yeah, hands down. That shadow of a doubt.
Well, there we go. Three votes then. Motion passed. Paul Wanless is added to the UTAS Hall of Fame. We've got a couple of these Hall of Fame pods knocking around. So, yeah, scroll back on Spotify or iTunes, however you're listening to this, and you can listen back to ones where we talk about people like Scott Rendell and
Leon Legg.
Leon Legg, who famously didn't get in, but there's a couple knocking around. So that's all for part one. Join us in part two, where Tom speaks to the man himself.
You are my official entry for the podcast Hall of Fame.
But, oh, bless you. Thank you very much. But, I mean, honoured.
it's better than all the official, because you're in the Club Hall of Fame anyway, aren't you? I think
I am. I was inducted first with Dion Dublin. The two of us went in. So, yeah, I'm in there again. Very, very honoured about that. So it's lovely. You know, I took a couple of my daughters where it came with me for the do, and yeah, it's one of those that you think, oh, I've done somewhat right in my career, so some of them won't ever be taken away from me. So, you know, chuffed, to be honest with that.
But, and you also, don't you have a tea bar named after you in there?
Well, I certainly do. I've yet to have a cup of tea or a burger or anything from it. But, you know, one of my mates joked with me. He said, yeah, it's a shop they've named a bar after you, but it's not the bar he was referring to, I don't think. So, unfortunately. But no, it was weird. I didn't actually know they were doing it. And the day that my eldest daughter, Bradley, my little boy, and my wife, we went to a game, and we got out of the car, we parked in the ground, turned around, went, oh, and they'd just opened it that day.
Oh, nice.
So it was a bit of a coincidence, really. It wasn't planned that way at all. So I don't know if people did think, oh, they brought him in for it. No, but we were arranged to go to the game weeks in advance, and didn't even know they were doing a thing, and it got voted in, and yeah, I was chuffed, to be honest, when we saw that. My daughter and the missus were, they were more emotional than me, really, I think. But it was something I thought, do you know what? That's something that doesn't happen often. So, yeah, I was made up with that. And it's nice to be recognised by the supporters, because it was their folk. It could have been anyone. Or, you know, I know that John and Josh have got it as well. So they put out they voted for three people, and, yeah, I was made up with it. So, well, you can't help but not be made up with it. I mean, and what, a couple of years before, they did the all-time 11 and got our names, you know, painted on the shirt on the main stand.
Yeah,
and
that
again, it's nice to let the little one stand beside that. I was taking a couple of pictures, and I feel quite humbled and delighted as well, really, for that.
Nice. And is he a Cambridge fan, or is he Liverpool like you?
Do you know what, he is actually. It's a strange one with him. The missus is a Blackburn fan. Don't know where that comes from, you know. But so we do try to go to Blackburn once a season, which we have done for the last. Well, we were due up to go up to Leeds game this year, but obviously it's when all this kicked off, we couldn't go. But we've gone the last couple of years, so now he'll turn, and he actually says Leicester. And the reason behind that, he was two and a bit, near on three when they won the league.
Yeah.
So every time you put football on, which was on all the time in our house, it was like Jamie Vardy and Leicester City and blah, blah, blah. So we fell in love with them. But now he will turn around and go, well, Leicester, Liverpool, Blackburn, and I do like Cambridge and Oxford.
like
so
that.
Games that he goes to, really. So he's got a few, but it's a funny one. So when Leicester play Liverpool, he goes, I hope for a draw then, Dad. I hope for a draw. Bless him. But I think deep down, I think he does like his Leicester.
Yeah, plenty of options.
Plenty of options, but he does love going to Cambridge. The reason behind, he's forever on the football pitch kicking a ball about, and it makes it, you know, he loves it. So whenever we go to Cambridge, he absolutely is made up with it. So he does enjoy when we go there. And we do go, obviously, a couple of times a season. And every time I get there, it's like, you come and do this, you come and do that. And all Bradley said, Dak, you take me on the pitch, you take me on the pitch. How long I'll be remembered at Cambridge that I can get him on the pitch, I don't know. But at the minute, it's never been a problem. So it's quite nice that I can get him out and about.
Okay, let me kick everything off, really. Is there any kind of favourite behind-the-scenes story while you were at Cambridge?
Do you know what? It's a hard one with the old behind-the-scenes stories. There's some serious ones. There's some funny ones. I mean, one that comes to mind, you know, the canal. I don't actually know the name of the Blooming Canal, but runs around the back. And we used to run that on a cold day, or if the grounds were, like, frozen, we couldn't train. Or even if it was just for a warm down, Roy McFarland used to like us running down the canal. And it was about a four-mile run. We used to run a couple of miles down, stretch off, turn around and run a couple of miles back. Well, anyway, we got down there one day and it was freezing. I remember it being a really, really cold day. And Martin McNeil was a bit of a joker, and that we used to always take the mick out of him as a young lad just coming to the squad. Well, Roy jokingly just went, swing him in, lads, and I'm quiet. Well, I don't think he actually thought we would, but we did. I mean, it's not safe when you think back of it now. So we had about seven of us, you know, all grabbed him and slung him in. And of course, we then all just run back. We started running back. And he must have come into that change room about 30, 40 minutes after we'd all got back, bless his heart, soaked head to toe, but frozen solid. I mean, not clever now, but it's just something that makes me giggle when we think back, and all of us had a good laugh about it. I'm not sure Martin have you giggling about it too much, but that's one of the ones that does strike me, that I do remember that one.
And you said he was the like to laugh. He was the kind of joker of the.
Well, the jokes were basically thrown at Martin. So that, when you're young coming in, it's a lot harder. The sort of like you're the one that sort of takes a lot of the brunt. But you know, we didn't really have that many that were. We all mucked about. We all sort of done bits and bobs. But I always guess Neil Musto. He was quite a funny lad. He tried to be a bit of a crack, and he used to wind people up. And so I'd probably lean that the bit of the joker would be Musso. You know, he didn't do anything specific, but you always knew if there was something going on, he would be one of them. That sort of brings me back to another story then, watch. We'd played a game which involving Musso. I think we were away at Blackpool somewhere. We were a long, long way away, and we got turned over. And on the Saturday, I had him back. Obviously, generally, you're off on a Sunday, but anyway, we're all on the way back. We didn't get back till late, whatever it be, on Saturday night at the ground. Roy McFarlane hadn't said a word all the way home on the bus. It was a very subdued atmosphere coming back. And all I got, I was a skipper at the time, so I come back, he just turned around and I said, "Wanny, tell the lads 8 o'clock tomorrow morning in the change room." Yeah. So I was like, oh. So he's one of those that I just have to turn around on the bus, go around all the lads. The lads are in tomorrow, 8 o'clock. So yeah, it comes. We all turn in at 8 o'clock. We sit there. We wait. It's now probably 9 o'clock. The gaffer was in, but we didn't see him. He hadn't come into the change room. Priestie comes wandering in. Obviously, Roy's number two. Right, lads, get changed. We thought, oh, here we go, warm down. Out on the track, which the like the little bit goes around the pitch. And so out we go. We jog to like one corner. Priestie's with us. We said, "What were up to, Priestie?" He said, "Ain't got a clue. He hasn't said yet." So we're like, oh, okay. Then Roy walks across out onto the pitch, walks to the centre circle, calls Priestie over, and he sort of like, Priestie jogs over. We start running. He comes back to us. "What we've got to do, Priestie?" He said, "Run." "Yeah, but what we're doing," he said, "just run." Okay. So off we go. We start running around this track. Well, anyway, about 10 minutes into it, Roy hadn't appeared. Priestie's just running. All the lads were running. You just hear Musso shout, "Oh, God, this is stupid. Shouldn't be doing this." You know? And at the top of the stand, it was Roy just sat there. And you're thinking, oh, no. So anyway, after about another 10 minutes, I hear, "Wanny, you can stop. Dunks, you can stop." He went through most of the team. You can stop. Anyway, he kept Musso running, bless him, for about an hour and 20 minutes. He kept going round and round and round. I'll never forget that. It was hilarious. We were all giggling. We were all now showered and back in the change rooms, yeah. When Musso finally come in, he got showered. And then Roy did come in and he gave us a bit of a rollicking for the performance the day before. But, yeah, I think that taught Musso to keep quiet at times or check where the gaffer is at least. Bless him.
Would you say Roy was your kind of favourite manager over the time period? I guess you would have been there for the longest, because who was it? It was Tommy. Was it
Tommy? Tommy signed me. Yeah, Tommy Taylor signed me. Roy came in, and I think I've gone on record many a time. I mean, I think people go, "Well, you're going to say Roy made you captain. He done this, and you were successful with him." And yeah, that is true. And I just felt his man management was fantastic. He was different than others in that way. He'd almost include me. I was almost like he actually said to me, he pulled me in once, and you know, when he was getting changed in the old restrooms, we call it, he called me and said, you know, when he named me captain, he said, "Well, you're our link, Paul. You're the link between the change room and the office, you know, the management." He said, "I don't want you to grass them up. I don't want you to do anything. That's not what I'm asking." But I said, "I need to know if the lads are tired, if the lads are this and the lads are that. You need to let me know. You're the one that has to be my eyes and ears," without stitching up on players. It makes it sound like you're there to spy on them. You're not. So one day, I'll never forget, he says to me, when I never ever said it before, but the lads come in, we're all shattered. Well, we had a couple of hard games, a few hour training sessions, and I don't even know if it was a Monday morning or a Tuesday morning. So I thought, I'll go and let the gaffer know. So I knocked on the change room door, you know, the restroom, and said, "So, gaffer, just come a quick word." Yeah, you come. You once told me to let you know. And I said, "I'm just keeping you the heads up. Lads are coming, a few of them are stiff as a board, you know, really, really stiff, really tired, really sore, just letting you know." "Oh, okay, Wanny, no problem, thanks for letting me know, off you go." So anyway, about 20 minutes later, Roy comes in the change, and I thought, sort of like a stitch up, he turns around, he just says to me, right then, who's knackered? Wally tells me you're all absolutely... And I'm like, right, thanks for that. And none of them put their hand up. And I thought, you're having a laugh, because obviously they were fearful that he's going to say, why, what's up with your, you know, you ain't done this or you ain't done that. And I'm thinking, oh, great. But typical Roy's fashion, it's one of the reasons I love me, just said, right, anyway, get your trainers on, lads. And I thought, oh, no, we're running now. You know, he's going to do the opposite. He's going to absolutely beast us. And we jogged out the ground with Preecy. We jogged out the ground down to, I think it's B&Q around the corner. It's like a burger bar there.
Yeah.
And he bought, and Preecy had money on his back pocket. He bought, bought us every one of the players a bacon butty. We stood in the car park, we ate the bacon butty. We jogged back to the change room. Roy came in, he said, get a shower, boys, I'll see you tomorrow. Get home. And that was the sort of little things he would do. You know, so and I thought that he was just fantastic. I mean, they're all good in their own way. You learn from everyone, but Roy was just something else. And, you know, and people think, well, he obviously, you're going to say that because, you know, he liked you or whatever. But people forget when he first came in, which most managers do, they try to bring their own players in, they get rid of players. And he put me in the reserves and he watched me play this game. I'll never forget, he came in, and he pulled me to the side. He said, you know what? He said, cross come in, I saw you head it. He said, the keeper tipped it over. He said, about 20 seconds later, Dave crossed it. He got headed out of our box. He said, I looked and I thought, hang on, that's one. He's headed it again. So he said, from that day, he said, I liked you. You're up, down, you've done that. And he was just honest the way he spoke. And that was it. So he put me back in the first team and I never looked back from that day. And it was, you know, and I've got the ultimate respect for him to this day and appreciate everything he'd done for us. And he gave us some good times at Cambridge. He taught the players a lot. He got a young team in and, yeah, some of that I'll remember forever, really.
Who would you say was your kind of best mate at the club while you were there?
Hard one, because when I first come, you're all mates, but the people you hang about with, it was different for me. Because I was there over a period, like when Roy came in, he got a young team in. I was married, I had kids, and a lot of the lads didn't. So when I first come in, the group that I got together with, our car school would be in Danny Granville, Jody Craddock, Matty Joseph. They were the guys that I got on really well with at the time. But over a couple of years after they're gone, I would say, get his name right, Arjun Van Houston. Do you remember the keeper?
Yeah.
Iceman, we used to call him. He lived not far from us, really, in a place called Thrapston. I was in St. Neot, so got to know his wife, Karen. We used to spend time together as family. So he became a very, very good friend of mine in that period. And then he obviously went. And I sort of like, even to this day, me and Dunk sometimes speak to Andy Duncan, and we became good mates. We all hung about. We all, like, mixed together, but probably go along those lines for who were my mates.
Talking about training, who would you say the best trainer was at the club?
Tough one, because again, like I said, we some of the lads like to do weights after training. I was always the first in. It's nothing, just how I was raised. I don't do lateness, and I'll be in early. I'll be in before even the injured lads are getting. So I tend to do a couple of little bits of weights then or whatever. Probably have four or five cups of coffee. So all the lads sort of mingled together. We didn't have, I know people read all the time, he stays behind for an hour after training, dust that, this and dust that. We had lads who go in the gym, some would disappear earlier. So although I was first in, I was probably one of the first out after training. But, you know, some of the lads were there, like I say, go and do their weights. Then I'd done mine prior to training. But because we always trained away from the ground, it was hard. So once we finished training, we pretty much all headed back to the ground. So no one really stayed out, but we all sort of did similar and everything. I remember in the gym, Terry Fleming was very, very good in the gym. He loved his weights. Lionel was an absolute lunatic in the gym. He used to throw weights about and he loved it. But that, you know, so you've got to look at someone like Lionel, who's very, very professional, train hard and work hard. But we all did. We all did it in our own way. So it's one that I wouldn't actually go. We had this lad who was just different than everyone else. We were all good in what we did.
Did you have anybody who was the opposite?
No, everyone. We didn't accept it. If it's a group of players, you don't accept it. If someone's not pulling their weight, you let them know. You know, and I think even John Bett was very good at that. I mean, he brought Dave Kitson in. There's another story. We were on the pitch. We're doing a first team fever reserves, one of John's specials. It was something like we can't pass the ball backwards every time he's got to go forwards, things like that. But anyway, after about 20 minutes, I'll never forget, he said, right, and stop. everyone over here on the halfway line, not you kits, you stay there. So I'm not, it's not a proper Dave, it's just how he talks, how he signals things. And he made us do a 60-second lap around the pitch. So we all sprint off, and he turns to Dave and he went, that's what they're doing when you don't put the effort in on the pitch. He said, you stand around and not running in those channels or doing this. He said, they have to do extra work in a game. So it, you know, I thought that's a clever way of describing it. Kits was running about, but I think it was just a way of John getting it across to make him do more. So we never had anyone who never put in the work, to be honest. Everyone did quite very, you know, work their socks off in truth. You had to, otherwise you wouldn't be at the club very long.
Yeah. And did you see like the likes of Kits and Ashby making the step up? I know a couple of others, Bruno kind of jumped on. Were there anybody else who thought, or, you know, who you didn't think, or who made the jump up to?
When I first came, I remember I was joking, actually in our car school, I'm going back here, Jody, I used to get on very well with, I still chat with Jody, and he knew that Jody's a centre-half, he's a proper defender, you know, that probably nowadays wouldn't get in as much now in the aspect of, you know, they like a football playing centre half maybe a little bit more, but Jody was good in the air, he was quick, he was strong, he was a real, real proper defender, so he's going to go somewhere. Danny Granville, you knew, was very good.
Yeah.
He got forward with the ball so well, you thought he's going to do all right, and obviously it wasn't long before Chelsea grabbed him. Michael was superb in midfield, he did well, and I like the Kits now, you always thought there was something about Kits. I mean, he was very raw when he came to us, but you just looked at him and thought, he's a handful. He will be a handful. He can be. And he was quick. He had very good feet, which people didn't really give him credit for his size. So you thought, he's got a chance. And Ash came from Derby, from Roy Boughton from Derby, and he played in the Prem for Derby, made his debut. So obviously Roy had seen something in him. And Ash was a steady player and a good player. And I think he'd be the first to admit, I don't think anyone could see Hull going on what they did.
Yeah.
But no, he'd done fantastic, and I was made up for him. And to skip him through all the divisions like that, it's like a boy of dream. And now, when they moved from their old ground to the new, they had a nice new stadium. And I wouldn't say that you'd look at Ash and go, yeah, he's going to do it, but he certainly did. And all credit to him. And I thought, fair play. But like I said, Roy must have seen something in him a long ago. Ash was a very good player, good on the ball, good left, right foot. He was a strong lad, you know. I was so happy that he did do that. And you also got Mark Joseph, who went down to Hull as well. So we had a few lads that made the move, and all credit to them. So, yeah, you saw one or two, you thought they got a good chance, and one or two, I think, were a little bit maybe of a surprise. But all credit, they've done what everyone dreams of doing, so you certainly can't hold it against them.
Were there any that you thought were going to make? I remember when we had Armin One, I think.
Everyone talks about Armin. Yeah, he certainly had bags of talent, and I don't know, he came on board, and obviously he had the Wonder Game at Ashton Gate and stuff, but Arlen was just a strange character. I think he came in, he was obviously a big lad, struggled with his weight, just carried a lot of weight, and trying to shift it. I think if you could really, like nowadays, I think they're isolated and train him singly. I remember us doing this training session, the lads were looking, he could hardly run around the pitch, bless him, and he had the heartbeat on, and the fitness coach was saying, slow down. I thought, he goes any slower and you're walking backwards. It was, you know, bless him. But he has so much ability in his feet, left and right foot, hammer shot, you know, big, strong lad. I think I've said it before, I think if anyone at the right thing could have done more, it probably could have been him, because he had all the ability, he really, really did. And you know, it's a pity, and I don't think Cambridge saw the best of him by any means. So, you know, he weren't there long enough to do it. So, But what we did see of him, I think he showed glimpses of what he was capable of.
Who would you say was the most skillful you played with?
Skillful. Skillful, I find that hard, because some people will look at, you know, everything's a skill, heading the ball or whatever. But if you're going about going past players, I look at wingers, and I think we had wingers in abundance. Like I say, Danny Granville, although he's left back, could go past people with ease, but not in a skillful way, but you could just drift past players. We had Shane Tudor, Omar Reitz, and Tony Scully. They're three people that, with the ball at their feet in tight situations, would get out of it and give you an end product. So those were the people that I would look and say skillful. I know a lot of people go, well, who can juggle it about and do that? I take my kids to the circus, so don't worry about that. we had a few people like that who can keep the ball up and do different tricks and that, but they were pointless in my eyes. You know, that was just training ground banter, really, but you don't do it on a pitch. So I would say that our wide men, we had several skillful wide men. You know, very clever one would be Paul Rayner. Again, he's good with the ball at his feet, but would buy you free kicks and that had no pace, but, you know, it was just skillful in that aspect. So we didn't have a player that you'd look in the... who was the winger who used to play at school? Was it Peter Beagrie?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that is when somebody you're looking at, he was skillful. We never really had that. We had wings that get the ball, attack with pace and go past people at pace. And, you know, they were the people that we had at the time. So they would be my skillful ones.
Who was the club hard man? Or is that you?
Well, I wouldn't want him to play against me. I know that. So at the time, I would probably say, yeah, it would probably lean towards me. No one really... Well, it wasn't that I wanted. It wasn't that that was. Just, it's just that's how I played the game. I didn't go out to be hard. You know, it just went out that that's how I'd win the ball. But, you know, if it means I have to take several people out of the way to get it, that's so be it. Yeah, we did. Other than that, I mean, Dunks is strong, solid, never pull out of a tackle. You had Scotty Eustace came in. He was similar. Yeah. Was strong, solid. You know, again, a very, very strong player. So yeah, we have people in that mould. But yeah, with their stuff, you know, that I was probably the one that would have to mix with the other people. If it come to it, it'd be me. So I'd let others answer that question in truth. I never had anyone in our team that I would be fearful of facing, put it that way.
Yeah. What's your favourite game for Cambridge?
Favourite game? Cool. I played one or two. So that, you know, I think we mentioned quite often the people remember the likes of Notts Forest away, 3-0 down and come back to 3-3. The Sheffield Wednesday when we knocked out Watford, who were then in the Prem, we knocked them out, went to Hillsborough, won at Hillsborough. The great return at our place, we drew 1-1. So we went through there. They're big, big games. But I think games that I remember that are special, one would be Rochdale away, when we won promotion. That obviously, it's always going to stick in your head because it's something that every person dreams or player dreams of. And to finish the season, well, not finish the season, but to get to that point where the aim is for promotion, we capped it at Rochdale away, that's special memories. And I'll also, what we just touched on would be the Ashton Gate one where we, I think we drew 0-0 at home against Bristol City. They missed a late penalty. And by all accounts, we'd heard that Ashton Gate was a sellout and they had already booked all the hotels in Cardiff for when they get to the final. And we go over there and Armand scores a couple. Lionel pulls off a couple of unbelievable saves and we turn them over 2-0. And that summer, I remember popping to that corner and with a smile on my face, doing a little dance with all our supporters there. And we had a few there and it was wonderful. I've been back a couple of times since and every time I go back to that ground, it does raise a smile.
What your favourite goal be?
Goal? It's not my best goal. The favourite goal, it'd have to be, because you don't get to do it often. We only score against Peterborough at home. I never forget, I think Butts played it through and I'm now sort of 50-50 with the goalkeeper and there's no way I'm pulling out. And he, I could see it, he just froze. He actually just stopped as I slid in and I got my toe on the end of it. It goes between his legs and he's sort of frozen about 15 yards out. And as I slide in and poke it between his legs, it goes in. I remember standing up and it was the Peterborough end, it was at home at the old allotment end. So it's full of posh fans. And as I scored, I stand up to celebrate, turn to face off the players coming to celebrate with me. And I remember the shorts gone right up my backside. So all I can remember is I'm stood there with all Peterborough fans, can obviously see with my arms in the air and my big fat bottom sticking out into their faces. So I'll always remember that goal, that one that it's quite special for me.
And what's your best goal then?
Best goal for Cambridge will probably have to be Chester away. Tom Young slid back, got his toe to it, and I hit it first time. And I'm no exaggeration, it must have been 35 yards, 40 yards. And I remember the headline said, Banks and Shilwan, this is true, Banks and Shilwan in their prime, in goal together, wouldn't have stopped it. It just went like a bullet into the top stanchion. And I thought, yeah, I remember that one, that's a special goal.
Who was it? Was it Tommy Youngs who scored one against Cardiff and it got stuck in the stanchion?
Yeah, Tom did do one like that. I don't know if it was against Cardiff. You're probably correct that he was. But yeah, I'm sure it was Tom that did that.
Oh, yeah. No, it wasn't like an amazing goal. It's just it got wedged. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant.
You remember those little things. Yeah, yeah, it's one of those. And I remember the headline coming out. I mean, I scored another one similar with Malefa Torquay. It was against an old teammate of mine. The keeper was Ken Fazey. And I hit it with my left foot, and that again was about 30 yards, but it was wind assisted. It was blowing a gale, and the wind was behind my back, and it just went like a bullet with my left foot, which was rare. And it just went, yes, straight into the stands. And I thought, well, yeah, I enjoyed that as well. So there's a couple of good ones, but I think the one that will stick in the memory is my bottom in the faces of the Peterborough fans.
Nice. you applied for the Cambridge manager job. Position.
I did once upon a time, and I have gone, yeah, I mean, it was one of those, do you know what, I can't recall when, and this is not, it was it like, when I say by that, I mean, it's like 3-4 managers ago, I really can't remember, but I did, I sent in a letter with the CV, and, you know, I thought they pretty much knew me anyway, but, yeah, and I got a letter back, and it was just, thanks for your application, but not at this time, basically. So I never got an interview, but yeah, so I did, and I thought after that, I thought, do you know what? I thought I'm not going to bother again. And people said to me, you should do this or do that, and I just thought, well, life's moved on a bit now. In the lower divisions, you're not on massive money, and you know my current situation, where I live, I work in the family business and I help run that. So why settled here? The little one settled here, and it's one of those that. Would I rule against going back? No. But if it's something that I'm thinking I'm going to do, again, no. Not now.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Would it have been George Rowles who was chairman at the time?
Do you know, I really, really couldn't say who. And that's just, I can't recall when it was. So you think, I bet it was a while ago. If I told you that at Kieran's wedding, how long have they been married? I mean, I really, really can't think.
A good 3-4 years ago, I think.
Exactly. Messi was a couple of years before that, you know, minimum. So you're looking at 6, possibly 8 years ago. So I don't know, is the honest answer, when I did it. But it is true. I did send the letter in. I did send my CV in.
Because there's that rumour when we appointed Martin Ling. And I think Rowles was chairman. And at the same time, I think we were going in for Liam Daish as well. And I think apparently they were at the stadium at the same time and in different parts of the pitch. And Ling accepted. God. So he sent Liam Daish a text saying, not you.
I have heard a story about that before. And one was coming down and they sent him away. Yeah, I've heard all that. I can't remember who did it, but I have heard that story.
I'm pretty sure it was George Rowles.
And I thought that's, and they both were offered the job. I yet come, we're going to sign the contract and blah, blah, blah. And as they were coming in, one said, actually, no, you're not now. Yeah. I do remember it. And not good.
No, Martin Ling said that was his worst time as well, managing Cambridge.
Well, do you know, Ling was some player as well. I played against him. He was a blooming good player. He played in the Glen Oddle Swindon team, and we used to play against him. And yeah, very, very good centre mid. He was a good player.
There was a charity match, and I was down in amongst the lads for that. He played for a bit. And he still had good legs on him, and
he's a good player, Martin was. So you know, so and the thing was, when they played that, when he was in the Hoddle Swindon team, which went on into the Prem, he sat in front of the back four and stuff. But that was like a new thing. Glenn Hoddle brought the diamond in. So playing against it as a midfielder in 4-4-2 is always difficult because you always felt like you had 4 against 2. Yeah. You know, and they played it so well. And, you know, he Glenn Hoddle had that one down to a T. But Lingy was key in that. He was a fantastic midfielder.
Well, you have to come on an away day with us.
I'm game to any of it. Just let me know.
I think it'll probably, definitely. I imagine it'll be next season now. We'll see what happens with everything.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm up for that. Don't you worry about that.
Lovely stuff. I will keep you updated, and I will let you know when this goes out. I think it'll be probably a couple of weeks.
Yeah, no, that's fine. No worries at all. Like I say, it's a group to have. Like you say, it's funny as people say to me, it's nice to be remembered. I said, yeah, but in probably another 10 years' time, who's going to remember me? You know what I mean? It's one of those, because obviously the people that remember me must have been like 15 or 10 to 20 going 10 to 25, and you know, those guys are now those that were 25 won't be 20 odd years on.
Yeah,
so, yeah. They're in their 50s now, so you know it's going to be. I'll enjoy it while I'm remembered, mate.
Well,
I've
got a couple more years in me. Well, saying that, I get to games as and when I can with two kids, but I'm granted a lot more freedom than I thought I'd be.
My missus, when it comes to football, she's brilliant. She ain't got shit worried about it, so I can get out, and I'll definitely come on my game with you, 100%.
Lovely stuff. Right, great to speak to you about.
And you, mate, and I'll waffle with you again soon.
Lovely stuff. Take it easy.